VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to The Ruck. My name's Stephen Jones. We usually start off with some frippery making fun of our panel. And today's panel has plenty of scope for that. But before we do, just a serious note. On the weekend in the Sunday Times, and I'm not saying this to sell papers or for any other reason, but because it's important for us today, I interviewed Mark Jennings, the former Sale player, whose life, beyond any doubt, was saved by the support he received in extremis from the Rugby Players Association and their backup schemes and their backup systems. Mark suffered a terrible childhood, started drinking at the age of 15, and in his 20s was addicted to painkillers, to drugs, and to all sorts of substances. And it blew up in a search for his real father way back in South Africa years ago. He found out that his real father was actually someone who'd raped his natural mother. And if there's ever an indication that professional rugby is not all glitz and glamour, it was in Mark's testimony and story. I'm not saying you have to buy it. I'm just telling you that's why, partly why we're here today and what we're going to talk about. We're in the company of an illustrious panel. We've got 137 caps between us. admittedly, the legendary Rochelle Clark has got all 137 of those. As we all know, she's the most capped England player of all time. Rochelle, not only that, but Chesham, under your coaching, just been promoted. Is that correct?
Is indeed, yeah. The boys have just been promoted.
And you dominated the BBO Premier League, as far as I can see?
Yes, almost, until this weekend. We had a loss, unfortunately. So we had we won the promotion a week before, and then we didn't quite have the team we needed out.
Okay, and how much of that promotion run would you put down to the coaching?
Oh, all of it, of course, okay, naturally. Okay.
That's what they all say. Rochelle will be telling us about this weekend's Tyrrell's Premier 15s semi-finals. There's two great games there, one Saturday, one Sunday. And our second guest, unfortunate not to win cap, some people feel. Christian Day played brilliantly for Sale and for Northampton in the second row, over 300 games in the Premiership before retirement. Christian, do you feel body-wise that you had 300 games in the Premiership?
I feel a lot better now than I did 6 months ago, I'd say that.
Have you got any sort of things that in the morning force you to stay in bed for half an hour or take you half an hour to get out of bed?
The titanium bolts in my neck prevent that from moving very much, and the bolts in my ankle, but I feel pretty good physically, actually.
Christian is a former chairman of the RPA and now the player liaison manager, and a very, very important post, and one I think, talking to you, Christian, you take it almost as seriously, or possibly as seriously, as you did your professional rugby career.
Yeah, it's a new role. It's been created specifically for me, and they're not an easy bunch to work with, our professional athletes. So my work cut out, but it's very, very enjoyable.
We've noticed that, actually, with professional athletes. And thirdly, after a lovely skiing break, Owen Slott.
Literally.
And he's holding up his savagely wounded left wrist with a black plaster on it.
Yeah, not many panellists would be brave enough to come in with this injury.
But I think you've done really well.
I have. I've fought through the tube, and here I am.
He's been sadly missed. Actually, the couple of weeks you were away, Slotty, the office and the studio were besieged by people desperately trying to get in, saying, "We want Slotty." We found afterwards a lot of them were bailiffs, but they weren't fans. Maybe the newsworthy line of the week is that Leicester Tigers, we've all been thinking, well, there's no way they'll go down. Suddenly, You think that they're playing Newcastle away on Friday. Should Newcastle win with a bonus point, which actually is not beyond the bounds of possibility, it's not likely, but it's not beyond the bounds, and should Worcester put away, should Worcester win their game this weekend, then Leicester are bottom. It's absolutely incredible. And Christian, did you ever think you'd see the day when Leicester were battling relegation?
Probably not, to be honest. I mean, you, certainly 3 or 4 years ago, you'd never have said it was possible. But yeah, the pressure's on now. They've got two big home games for me that I think they'll need to win to stay up. And I think they're quite lucky that Welford Road does tend to be a happy hunting ground for them, because I think those two, like I say, they need to win them.
Rochelle, I know you follow all the Premiership stuff, but was there ever a time, or are you almost, you can't believe it yourself, that the Tigers are in the relegation mess?
I know, growing up as a kid, they've always been really dominant, and it's quite a shock to see them down in the sort of bottom three and with the potential to go bottom, depending on the weekend's result. So, yeah, I never thought that, and you've got, you know, fantastic players there, but it's just not coming together.
And Owen, we've both been involved in the debate, as is everybody, as to whether there should be promotion and relegation.
Hmm.
And what, you know, the people who want to ring fence it off, they always say, well, of course, last year London Irish were way out of it, and so it was boring. Well, this year has been the most fantastic thing. Sports editors of all shapes and sizes are into it. It's horrible if you're involved in it, but it's unbelievably exciting for fans and for journos.
It is an amazing story, but I think in previous years we haven't had a decent relegation battle in it, and it hasn't been an item of any interest because the team that's been bottom has sunk like a stone from the start of the season. But this season the battle at the top is distinctly uninteresting because Saracens and Exeter have just pulled away, and they're clearly a class above everyone else, and I think we'd all be rather surprised if we didn't see a Saracens Exeter final, which is the same final as last year. So we have got this really, really amazing story at the bottom. Newcastle are bottom at the moment. They were in the top four last year. I mean, that's an extraordinary fact in itself. But we, you know, you can't get away from seeing Leicester down there and the genuine possibility that they could go down. And I don't think the administrators are going to be able to prevent relegation this season.
Christian, you saw your old lads yesterday at Northampton against Gloucester. Absolutely, really great match for what you might call the committed spectator or the uncommitted spectator as well. But did you get the impression that Gloucester really, despite their win yesterday, have got a lot to do to challenge should they make the last four?
Well, they were certainly good with the ball, absolutely lethal. And Mark Atkinson in the centre, first half hat trick, but he's been on form for quite some time now. And under the radar, no one really seems to take notice of the fact of how good a distributor he is. But yeah, defensively, Saints are good with the ball this year, let's be honest. But defensively, you could see Exeter and Saracens making some hay there. And then we all know how good Saracens and Exeter's defence is. So yeah, there's some work to do for Gloucester without a doubt, but certainly with the ball, very, very potent.
And just going through your old clubs, Sale, after an abysmal start of the season, and now coming strongly and challenging for fourth place, which if any of the top four, at least they are a team in form. You obviously still follow Sale. What do you think?
I think they've gone back to what made Sale successful when I was there a long, long time ago, which was making a Friday night in Sale a horrible place to go. And I think I think you saw
was that on the field or off the field?
It's good night out afterwards. But no, I think you saw that with Harlequins, brought some niggle as they tend to do. But Sale were more than up to the challenge, and they've got in Tom Curry, I think, an absolutely superb young player who was again fantastic on Friday night alongside John O'Ross in the back row as well, who's another player who just every week seems to perform. And they're difficult to beat, aren't they? They're a handful.
Rocky, Wasps have had a disastrous run. They seem to revive this week. This is the Wasps men's team, revive this week with a win that must have caused so much relief. It must have almost blown the walls down there. What vibes have you got from the men's team? This was a really, really belated victory.
Yeah, absolutely. It ends the run of four defeats, and Nathan Hughes for me was just the talisman to get him on the front foot. Big ball carrier, go forward, and Brad Shields as well on form. With Hughes with his two tries, just was phenomenal for me, and then Shields turning over ball, just work rate around the park, and I think you've got to go to those guys. to get you back on track.
It's a shame in that case. These are Nathan Hughes' final games for the club. So what's on the way back? The other thing is that the concept of the big game. Bath played Bristol at Twickenham this week. The first few games that Bath tried to stage there, you didn't feel they had that authenticity about them. This time, it looked absolutely wonderful. There were 60-odd thousand there. They showed the Bath team walking down a blue, black and white carpet into the dressing room. It all looked absolutely fantastic. Sotty, what's your view about the big games? I've been to a big game at London Stadium, Sarri's Quins recently. There's the one at Christmas. There's the one at the start of the year when they had a double header. Are they sort of, they've really caught on? Do we like them or do we not like them?
Well, I think they are brilliant marketing for the Premiership. I always find it amazing that Saracens often don't fill their 10,000 Allianz Park ground, but you stuck them in Wembley or the Olympic Stadium or the London Stadium, whatever it is this week, or Spurs next year, and they're getting, you know, they were getting 80,000 to Wembley. It was extraordinary, and likewise Bath filling or doing a good job at Twickenham. Quite often, the games I've been to are rarely real firecrackers. I've seen a couple of good Harlequins big games, the one they always stage just after Christmas, but quite often they're not. I've seen I went to the first Bath big game, and then I saw most of last weekend's on the TV. I just wonder if, I mean, it's a bit mealy mouthed to say that maybe because there's so many new fans who aren't sort of passionate till I die fans that these games don't maybe have quite the same crackle that they might do. Is that miserable of me, or is it just...
No, well, the thing is, rugby can exist just on its existing fans, so I think it's got to be like that. If someone's come for the first time, that's good, not bad, surely.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll stick with that with that appraisal then.
Christian, did you ever play in one of those big games where someone switches?
Yeah, loads. I mean, at Saints, we took a few to Milton Keynes and had big crowds on there. We had one game against Saracens one year. It was a cracking game. So it's the question is for that home team, how much do you want to go away from your safety net? How much do you want to go away from your home changing room where everything's comfortable and you know, take a punt on some new people seeing the game and putting on the show? If Bath had lost at the weekend and gone that game towards relegation battle, they might have been asking that question, but they won, so they're happy as anything.
Rocky, there's a great issue in the women's game at the moment. You've played at Twickenham, and everyone knows what a great honour it is to play for your country at Twickenham. This year, they took a game to Doncaster and they took a game to Exeter, which were both fervent, especially in Exeter, where they almost sold the ground out. There was a magnificent atmosphere, very supportive of England. And suddenly you think, well, which is best, playing in that game or playing at the home of rugby, but actually after a main international in the dark of a kind of English winter? Is that a tough call for the game to make from now on? And what did you think about playing at Twickenham?
I feel like obviously moving the game around has grown the support now. So if you still went up to Doncaster and I think it was a 5,000 crowd, and then down to Exeter, 10,500. And recently we've just had the game changer at Quins, and they got a record crowd, almost 5,000 for a club game. So there is obviously, you know, a backing to it. I think it is good to get the game to go around the country, and if you have that kind of following, if you go down to the southwest, I think it's, you know, something that you've got to do regularly. There is definitely something really special about playing at Twickenham. There was a big crowd there as well, but after a men's game, when it starts emptying, that's possibly not the best way to do it. Perhaps it could be changed to maybe before people have to get tickets to both, whatever it is, but certainly I think it's a good idea to get around the country, but equally at least once a year playing at Twickenham would be good.
Just tell me, you know, the women's game's changing by the second. You know this because you've got your antennae all over the place, but I'll give you one example. One of our local clubs in Berkshire tried to start a women's team, and instead of getting six or seven people, they got 40-odd, 38 of which had never played before.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And it really is replicated all over the place. It's like a forest fire. I mean, did you ever see the day when this would happen? I mean, suddenly okay, and it's not just a phenomenon of rugby, it's all sports.
Yeah.
You know, I think women are finding a sort of real, a new freedom and a new access to sponsors, TV, etc. But grassroots is just bombing.
Yeah, I think the real catalyst when I first started noticing it was the 2012 Olympics, and everybody got behind sport, whether it was men or women or mixed or whatever, everybody got behind women's sport, and I think a lot more people took it up. And then you had your This Girl Can campaign, and that made a lot of people realise that sport is, and fitness is, for everybody. And it's just great that we can get so many, you know, new faces coming to rugby. And I think it is one of the fastest growing sports now, and the coverage and, you know, support that it's had, I think it's just going to, you know, absolutely rocket, as you said, and we're starting to see the benefits now. Shame it wasn't 5 years ago, you know, so I could have enjoyed some of it, but certainly it's absolutely
awesome.
When
you say sure you've enjoyed some of it, did you not enjoy all of it?
Yeah, of course.
In a different way.
I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, being a member of the team since 2003 and seeing it grow, you know, when we used to have like three men and a dog watching, to now you're getting crowds over 10,500, you know, that is really something
special.
Do you not think it's great that you have been kind of like a pioneer? You have been the pioneer, I think it's fair to say, isn't it? But Jones, you've travelled around the world covering sport longer than I have. When I started as a sports writer, I was actually surprised. I went to countries like New Zealand, Australia in particular, South Africa a bit, but the United States very much so, that their coverage and the appreciation of women's sport was decades ahead of where we are. We're actually quite behind here. We're playing catch up. Do we think we're progressive? We probably don't anymore. But I just always found that really struck me. Wow, you know, the women's professional sports and participation were so much more encouraging than in the UK.
I think that's true in North America. But I wouldn't say anyone. How can anyone be behind New Zealand in any form of life?
Okay, well that was a foolish suggestion. Okay,
but they've still got Ford Anglias going on.
But they might have women wearing trainers who are playing for their country 20 years ago.
Yes, they did. Yeah, Christian, in the RPA, you've now got significant influx of women professional players. How's that changed the balance of it, and how's that changed your job? And do you find them sort of more receptive than the hardened old pros?
Well, so we had the women's sevens team for a couple of years now, and they've they're a fantastic group of athletes, and that's what they are, real athletes. Some of those girls have taken up rugby anew because they just fit with sevens. I think they've got ex-professional sprinters, and they were great to work with. But this year, obviously, with the women's 15s team going fully professional, so we now represent the EPS squad. Quite a lot of work went on with hammering out their contracts for this year, for what's the first time, and working with them, it's fantastic, to be honest. As a playing group, they're absolutely fantastic, but professionalism is going to change how that group of women are going to work, and that's why we want to be there to support them. It's brilliant that they're now being paid to play rugby, but we don't want them all down in tools, because they all had jobs before. They're now fully professional athletes, but we don't want them all to down tools. We want them to carry on with their career development just the same, so that when they finish playing professional rugby, and however long that is, they've got something to fall back on and to carry on their career like most rugby players have to.
So is that fair enough, Rocky?
Yeah, what I found really interesting was some of the girls now coming into the sevens and 15s. Their first job is to be a professional rugby player, and I just think that's amazing. But as you said, we have to keep these girls skilled, ready for when they finish rugby and go into the real world. But it's brilliant that there's such good support out there for them and the pathway.
Owen, just one final word on the Premiership. Leicester, Newcastle, I presume that's your target on Friday. At Kingston Park.
Is it the biggest game of the Premiership season so far?
I think in many ways it is. Yeah, yeah.
If Leicester win that, then they're getting close to safety.
Yeah.
If they don't, then the 2 weeks after that are just going to be extraordinary. I think it is the biggest game of the season so far, of the Premiership club game, because, as you say, the story of the year has been what's happening at the bottom, and that feels like a bit of a climax.
And it just shows again, you said that I've done it longer than you. I've done it longer than anybody, I think. But the amazing thing about the Premiership is you had to be there at the very start to appreciate what it's become. And you never, ever thought it would be anything like it's become. It's absolutely
amazing.
Now, something which is becoming bigger and bigger is Tyrrell's Premier 15 weekend. And I was going to ask Rocky what her pre-match programme was, but sadly, it's been interfered with a little bit with a wedding with one of your friends in Ireland, Rocky. It has a very bad clash.
I know, I'm pretty gutted to be fair, but yeah, I know the girls are going to be up for the game against Saracens. So it's going to be interesting because Saracens are missing a few key players themselves with injuries. Saracens' pack have been phenomenal this year. You've got massive ball carriers, and then you've got the likes of Bryony Cleal, Marley Packer, and Vicky Fleetwood out with injury. So that'll help us out a little bit. But they've still got the likes of Poppy Cleal, Hannah Botterman, and Zoe Harrison getting them on the front foot with her kicking game. So it's going to be really tough. But never say never. It's 1v4. And you've just got to throw everything at it. It's one game to win, to get yourself in the final, and the girls are certainly up for it.
Just on a front row note, Hannah Botterman and Sarah Byrne. I mean, what a pairing they could become.
Yeah, those girls are just another level in terms of ball carrying, the line breaks, the soft hands they've got. It's a new breed of prop, and it's so exciting to see. I just want to make sure that they keep scrummaging at the forefront because you need to win your set piece. But they've both been developing really well this season in their scrummaging. But it's lovely to see them out in the back line putting wingers away or bowling their way through. They're like two bowling balls. It's great to see.
Can I just ask on Saracens with the men's team? We talk a lot about why they're different, or rather the players like to talk about why they're different, or their culture's different, or their training's better, or whatever. And is there something that do the women's team like to distinguish themselves from others in the same way? Do they feel that they're better, different, I don't know, superior, or
I think they're just used to winning. Like they've won 17 out of 18 of their games, so it would be a massive upset if they got beat. So even there's been a few games that they've been close down to the wire the last 5 minutes, and they've just nicked it at the end. Poppy Cleal making a massive difference coming on, and I think there was maybe like 16 point difference, and then they came back to win against one of the teams. And to have that ability and that mindset to be like, don't worry, we'll win it. And when you've got massive ball carriers, like I mentioned, five of the big girls getting your front foot ball, and then Zoe's just got an armchair ride with George Gulliver giving her a zippy pass, then she can just go.
Just to clarify, the Saturday game is at Allianz Park, home of Saracens, between Saracens and Wasps. That's the first against the fourth in the final table. And the Sunday game is at the Stoop between Harlequins and Loughborough Lightning, new to the last four. Rocky, Quins at home would be narrow favourites, although Loughborough Lightning, they got some players too.
Yes, and that for me, that's going to be, it's close to call, to be fair. So Quins, again, they've had a phenomenal pack with the likes of Vicky Cornborough, Abby Scott, Jade Conkle, just big ball carriers, and they're a heavy pack as well, so they're very hard to scrummage against. And then you've got Rachel Burford in the midfield orchestrating what's going on. Her experience and her distribution has been key this year. And then you've got Loughborough. They've done really well in terms of getting players this season, with Katie Daly McLean going there, as well as Emily Scarrett. And then you've got England captain Sarah Hunter and Cath O'Donnell. So you've got some big players in the pack, and then the kicking game from Katie and Emily, I think, are going to be absolutely key. If they can pin, them back, I think this could be all on.
Mm-hmm. The two finals, the two semi-finals. If you're around Allianz Park or the Stoop, please go along and watch on Saturday and Sunday. The final is at Northampton Saints on April the 27th. It's anything like it was last year, it'll be fantastic. And don't forget, don't bother with Gary Lineker's soggy old Walker's crisps. Tyrrell's extra crispy crisps. are the ones for rugby people all over the world.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just referring to this week's Premiership programme, it's basically the whole programme is dedicated to Restart Rugby, which is the, I suppose you could say, the charitable arm or the charitable partner of the RPA. Christian, some of the stuff that Restart Rugby has already helped, people with physical injury, mental injury, people having difficulty sort of transforming themselves from player to non-player, etc., it has been wonderful. But do we sense now that the number of people who are asking for help and ringing the helplines, etc., is growing?
Yeah, I think that's the transformation in what the charity's doing now. I think the historic way the charity's been used has always been those major injuries, which are very visible and everyone knows about them. So for me, you know, Rob Horn last year, who suffered an injury that you never ever want to see. And the second that happens, Restart springs into action, and it's very much a case of what can you do to help. And in Rob's case, it was actually quite minimal because he was basically, you know, told the news near enough instantaneously that this was not a good prognosis, and it was about assisting him getting back home. It was about potentially providing assistance with an automatic car, things like that, just little things that make his journey a little bit easier. But I mean, there's countless stories of those kind of physical problems that players will encounter in an incredibly physical game, and every club will have it's not a talisman, but it's example of a player that needed some help. But as you say, and I think this is society at large, it's not just rugby, but mental health is becoming more and more prominent, more and more of an issue in the game. I've been given some stats, and I think one in four people in the street will encounter a mental welfare issue in per year, and turn that to professional rugby, and it turns into two in three of our retired players say they suffer at some point in a year post rugby. So Restart,
two in three,
yeah.
That's a shocking figure, isn't it?
From a survey of our past players. So we the RPA felt that we needed to act, and in the last, I think, 2 or 3 years now, there's been a confidential counselling helpline available to all of our current and ex-pros. And that is funded entirely through Restart. And I've got to say, since I'm now employed by the RPA, I get to see how many players use that and ex-players. And I was genuinely shocked how many players ring that number. And it's not just players, it's partners as well. It's parents. And it's a service that's very much needed. And I think people are much more open to speak about mental health nowadays. And that's probably why it's needed as much as it is. It costs the charity around about £50,000-£60,000 a year, and all of the proceeds of Restart Weekend are going to go towards that.
Rocky, this thing about transition, no one put more into the game than you did. No one was so passionate and almost welded to the game as you were. No one in your time sort of won 100 caps, etc. Even though you're still playing club level, have you found difficulty did you always fear the transition?
Yeah, it's something I definitely feared and tried not to think too much about. And it's only when you're there you just realise how difficult it is. and how difficult it is for people who've gone before you, and you've been sympathetic, but you don't know till you're there. So it's absolutely key to get that extra help and make sure you talk about any issues. And you know, it has been really tough, but as long as you've got a good support network around you and you know the ability to reach out when you need to, you know, it's you'll be helped through it. But I'm aware that I've spoke to ex-players who've said, you know, it'll take you like at least a couple of years to actually feel out of the game and feel back to normal.
The RPA started their Lift the Weight campaign a few years ago, one of the people that, you know, some people in the outside world wouldn't ever dream was struggling was Johnny Wilkinson. You did a heck of a lot of work with him. Were you aware toward the end of his career of the struggles that he had?
Yes, I was, because one of the moments in my entire career as a writer was when I helped Johnny with his autobiography. And I remember sitting in his house in the south of France when he was playing at Toulon, and talking through this stuff. And I was, until that point, I had I had no idea. I mean, you know, he was always an unusual and complicated person. But then when he started telling me these stories about the lows that he'd hit and what he'd gone through when he was right down there. One, when someone tells you stuff like that, it's a confiding thing, and it's a very tender sort of moment when you share something like that with someone, which he did. And at the same time, he knew he was doing it for his book, so I wrote down what he said and sort of started working on a chapter and sent it to him. And then we had a bit of toing and froing when he was going, listen, I'm not sure I want that in the book. You know, people think I'm Johnny Wilkinson, you know, the England hero, and they don't, you know, I'm not sure I want them to hear that I'm Johnny who's troubled, who's not always the guy that boys have pinned up on the posters on their bedroom walls, etc. And we talked it through, and so as you expect, I said, well, it makes you more vivid as a human being. It makes your story more interesting. It gives you more depth, and it would help people to know that. He thought about it for a fair time and agreed. And now he's one of the bigger faces of mental health campaigns, especially in sport in the country.
Christian, we talk about mental problems. How much of those in the players you come across or who've run into the helpline are kind of rugby related, in that people are suddenly now out in the big wide world? There's no one, coaches telling them what to do for every minute, or how much of them are actually almost incidental to rugby? They were mental problems anyway.
It's just difficult to answer without knowing all the cases. I don't get to know who phones the number, but injuries one which leads to problems. Johnny Wilkinson suffered years and years of injuries, and also that pressure of people on himself if he had to perform every weekend. Post rugby, I mean, it's something I've found since I've retired, because I exited the game on my own terms. I knew in September, October time I was going to retire at the end of that season. I was relatively injury free. I had a job lined up by Christmas time. I like to think of myself as quite self-sufficient. I can look after myself. And probably a month, 2 months into my new job, I was genuinely struggling because no one gave me the schedule on Sunday that told me where I was going the next week. Because no one cooked my meals twice a day. Because there weren't 40 guys who were going through what I was going through and chatting to every day and going for a coffee at 2:30 in the afternoon. All that gets taken away, and it's been institutionalised, really, isn't it? You're used to something. I did it for 17 years as a professional, and it got taken. And whether I was ready for it or not, personally, it still got taken away.
It's a loss of identity, isn't it? And a loss of what your purpose is. That's something I've found, and having spoke to other people, that you're just, what's my purpose? And purpose, so many people keep trying new things, and I'm going to be no exception. I'm going to see if I can take up cycling, and you know, I've really thrown myself into all my gym work and stuff, and it's like, I don't need to do that. I'm not, you know, Rocky Clark England player anymore. I don't need to, but certainly there's still that, like, that athlete mentality in there, and I need to change that.
Do you think that maybe this is particularly so a rugby thing, because professional rugby players have been told that the modern professional rugby player has been an athlete hero amongst school friends, etc., from the age of 10, 11, 12. And then they get recruited. And if you make it into the professional world, then you are a big heroic athletic figure to people in the crowd, and you get applauded every weekend, and there is a manliness in the camaraderie of the changing room as well, and it's not easy to admit that you have a weakness, or you're afraid of something, or you're not feeling on top of things, and that is how rugby culture has been, and maybe it's slightly changing now. Now it's okay to have these sort of conversations, but I think rugby in particular, a sort of a man sport in inverted commas, makes it less surprising for me in rugby.
Yeah,
is that nonsense?
It's not nonsense. I think professional sport takes people to places, and that's why professional sport's brilliant. Everyone wants to watch professional sport because it's competitive, and you don't know who's going to win on the weekend, and it's going to take you to extremes of happiness and disappointment, and that's something that's going to come from every sport. And you're right, rugby always has been the tough mantra. Just get on with things. You're not going to roll around on the floor with injury. You're going to pick yourself back up and get on with things. And yeah, that undoubtedly does contribute. But what I would say about rugby is, certainly not in the teams I played in, there were 30 or 40 people in the changing room who you could talk to. There weren't cliques. There weren't superstars who were aloof and didn't speak to people. They're tough environments, but there are people to talk to. And I think that's one of the good things about rugby, to be honest. And I think that translates all the way down to the amateur game.
It's funny because everyone would expect Rocky to be the toughest person in the England squad. And when you think of Duncan Bell at Bath, Big Dunk, everyone would have thought, well, he's the last person to ever always had a big smile on his face. And yet it was him who had the guts to kick it off at Bath and get up in front of the team and say, look, I'm having depression. And I have to say, Mark Jennings has never, ever confided in anyone or about anything in his whole life. But last weekend, he finally sent out a little tweet about stuff. When I came to see him, I thought, well, he's never going to say anything to me. This is going to be tough. He absolutely unloaded the whole thing. Mm. And I think that's why... What I'm saying is, it was actually the people who helped him with the RPA. And he's got people who go to see him once a week, and then they put him in touch with a psychiatrist in London. And to be fair to the bloke, you know, he said at the end, I enjoyed the conversation. And I was thinking, God, it's going to be terrible. And, you know, when you interview people and they never say anything, you think, oh, this is terrible. But as Mark kept on talking, I was thinking, God, this is terrible in another way. I can't believe all this happened to him, you know. And so talking is has got to be the right thing.
Does he want to play again, though? I mean, he's not playing. He doesn't want to play again.
Well, the question is, I was going to say, oh, a bit of a bad luck. You lost your Sale Sharks career. When are you going to come back? But I realised when I was there, there's absolutely nothing at stake regarding that. He just wants to stay alive with his youngster. And there's no happy ending yet. There's a lot of ground to cover. Maybe at some stage you might play amateur rugby, but the pro rugby, you just get these injuries. And as Christian said, that was half the time. You're sitting there for 6 months recovering on his own, as he always was, you know. Christian, Restart Rugby, how is the fundraising actually done? Are each club having a collection, or is there a website that people can go on to?
Yeah, so two. The big thing for me was I've come on board this year in this player liaison role. We've never had anything like it before. And for me, the players need to start giving a little bit back to the charity more than they are. So the big challenge for the players this weekend was to try and turn the Premiership red. So they're all hopefully going to be wearing their red boots and their red laces, their red tape, trying to raise the awareness of the charity. Because I've had to explain to you today what Restart is and what Restart does for the listeners or whoever else. It's the players' charity, and that's something that we need to build so that when Restart weekend comes around, supporters know they can support their players on that weekend. How can they fundraise? I think five of the six games this weekend are going to be fundraising on the day. We've also got a players auction which is going on. If you go on the RPA or the Restart Twitter, you'll find links to the auction. We've got some really amazing items have been given. Every club's got an ambassador, so I know Henry Slade's boots are on there. I know you can go to Leicester's game against Bristol in corporate hospitality with the players. You can go down to Bath and watch training and have lunch with the players. All unique items that the players have donated. And the target is to raise £20,000 over the weekend. And I know that with the stuff we've got and the opportunity we've got, we can do that.
So that's, again, if you look at the RPA or the Restart websites, you'll everybody out there, you'll be able to take part in it, and hopefully the Premiership will be painted red. What would be your going forward after that? What's the next stages? I mean, you say you're liaising with players. You're just going to be out and about all season and just chasing people down, really?
What, for myself?
Yeah.
I chase after them all day, every day. When you think you've got a quiet day, the phone rings at 11 o'clock at night and something's gone wrong, and you try and make a difference for them. It's the nice thing about what I do, really. It's never the same any day, and no, it's nice to work in rugby still and still get to interact with so many brilliant guys, and I'm very lucky to do that.
And Rocky, that was all very instructive. Owen and I have never had transition problems, although they may be coming along in a different way for us. But me before you, Slotty, of course. but
thanks for that.
What's your career path? Have you sorted out a career path, or are you still in that transition period where you're trying to work it out?
Yeah, I've always done my coaching, so I'm doing my level 4 coaching at the moment, so hopefully qualified by the end of the year. Mm. I want to give my best shot at doing some punditry and stuff, and I've done some commentating, etc., over Six Nations, which has been really good. And yeah, I think coaching and see what I can achieve. You know, still involved in rugby in any way I can.
I feel like Rocky's underplayed that. A level 4 coach. There aren't many level 4 coaches in the country, are there?
That's the very top of the tree.
That's like a degree, isn't it?
Mm. It's been really tough.
It's not a weekend for your coaching badge.
No, it's not 9 till 3. You're suddenly a level 4. It's a year and a half course.
Yeah. Slotty, do we think there will be a vacancy for the England men's senior coach coming up that Rocky could apply for after the World Cup?
Very good, Jonesy. Yeah.
No, because or France, or there's quite a few others. So you never know.
Lions?
Yeah. No, absolutely. The Lions
Rocky,
as well.
I think you know, it's your pick.
There we go.
How long before we'll have a female coach in the men's game?
Well, I think, okay, I think the next...
Good question. How long till we have a female coach in the men's game?
Well, let's have a national coach for the England women who's female, and I think the next appointment should be that. But there we go. Owen, we've heard a lot about players. Do we think that out there... People looked up to players so much and they think, oh God, they're so lucky, they're playing the match of their dreams. I'd love to be a professional rugby player. All they do is sit around in their tracksuits, etc. Is it a hard sell for some people to grasp the depth of these people's problems?
Well, if we're talking mental health, which is the thing, what you're suggesting, then it's still newish that we can talk about this so openly and that we can say sportsmen and our heroes, again inverted commas, experience these things. So I think it is. Yeah, I think it's really fantastic. Hopefully I would have said this if Christian wasn't sitting next to me and twice my size. But I just think it's fantastic that kids going into clubs now, they're told pretty much on arrival, you know, that there are going to be great days. You might win a trophy. You might play at Twickenham. You'll have lots of people thinking you're fantastic. But there's the other side of it as well. You know, it's not all glamour. And I think they pretty much get that picture when they start now, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I was a bit shocked, actually. Last week I saw, I think it was a 14-year-old schoolboy signed his first professional contract, which I'd never seen a kid that age.
No.
And it's
in rugby.
And it's in rugby. I think it was, I think Linethley signed an English schoolboy to a 6-year contract or something at 14 years old, and I could not believe
that's
that.
Right, that's
I didn't
right.
even know that was allowed.
And right. I remember my first day at Sale Sharks. I turned up at 18. I weighed 95 kilos. I was told to go and do some bench press, and I asked, "What's the bench press?" We got given a pair of socks, a pair of shorts, and one T-shirt. And if you train with if you were good enough to make the first team, you got given a waterproof top. And now you've got 16-year-old kids wearing the first team kit, the first team tracksuits with nutritionists and weight training, and the game is just different now. And you're right, they do get educated early, and we try to play a part of that. We have our, you know, our rookie camp every August, September time, where we have every new player, and we try to give them some advice, some stories, particularly from ex-pros. Things are different now. You're not the best kid from school anymore. You're one of a thousand top rugby players in this country, and your journey starts again now. But like I say, the game is just different now. It's different, and same I said about the women's game. The women's game, now that you've got 40 professional women, it's different now, and it'll start growing and growing and changing, and that's exciting for rugby, and I think with so much going on in the world game, it's exciting, but changes are coming, and it's trying to make sure those changes are managed rather than exposed.
We've revealed some pretty depressing items and some stories today, but actually I think the ultra message is that rugby's looking after its own now, on and off the field. It's trying to do so in terms of laws. It's not trying to do so in terms of cutting down the number of international matches, which is still crazy, I'm sorry. But it is a caring environment.
Did you manage to sneak that into the conversation?
I did. So
you got through almost to the end.
It's my fault.
I've not mentioned Spurs at all yet, or our magnificent new stadium. But Rocky, I always say that the people I didn't like in rugby that I've met, I could count on the fingers of one hand. Would that still be the case for you?
Yeah, you get on pretty much with everybody. There's still a few people that you just nod at, maybe. But
name and shame.
Just name those guys.
But certainly, you know, I've had some fantastic battles on the field, and there is that mutual respect because you are, you know, putting your bodies on the line and at times ripping into each other, and that's the physicality element that I absolutely love and thrive off. But certainly, I've just this weekend we celebrated Natasha Hunt, or Mo Hunt, her 30th birthday, and she had a barn dance down near Gloucester, and the amount of people in there from every different walk of rugby team she's had anything to do with was amazing. It felt like we were at her funeral. Like, there were so many different people there, and you just think how loved she is, and that was such a wonderful moment. Everyone's, you know, grabbing hold of each other, doing barn dancing, and all in their sort of Western outfit, and that was just a really lovely moment. And, you know, happy birthday to Natasha.
Okay. We'll get that psychiatrist ready there.
You weren't invited, were you, Josie?
I was there. We'd leave the last word to Christian, but players these days don't talk to us as much as they used to. We get one-line answers from media-managed people. Is that one of the great shames? And we're all missing out on how big these characters are.
Yes, straightforward answer, yes. I think professional sport, unfortunately, does that to people, especially in this country. There's a distrust of the media, which in rugby I think is unnecessary, but it is the way that that players have become, for a number of reasons, and it's a shame.
Christian,
hopefully
you have the last word. We're going to turn the Premiership red this weekend with the six games and a big fundraising around it, but that's just one day, and then the rest of the programme starts immediately after that.
Yeah, I mean, we're there for our players 24/7, and that's what the attitude I just want to build on from now is that the fans are there for their players every weekend, and I just don't think they realise sometimes how much help their heroes need, and the more we can encourage that help to come forward, the better.
Well spoken. We wish you all the best. Remains for us three, you three now, to give me your God and Goddess of the Week. We can make these a little bit light-hearted, I think. Doesn't have to be a doctor or someone like that, but... A God or Goddess of the Week, I'll give you about 3 seconds to think about it, and then I'll decide who the winner is. So, Stotty, you're used to this. Let's have your God or Goddess of the Week, please.
Yeah, I'm going to go straight to a player I saw yesterday who has been mentioned already on this podcast, but people don't know much about him. He's been a pro since 2010. He'd scored 7 Premiership tries in those 9 years until yesterday, when he scored a hat-trick in 40 minutes. That's Mark Atkinson, who is a great story of perseverance. He played for Sale and then Wasps, and then he dropped out of the Premiership and
I would expect that most people thought they wouldn't see him back in there. He played 3 years down at Esher and then Bedford, bounced back, given a chance at Gloucester, and he's been one of the most consistent players this season. And then yesterday he put together a hat-trick in the first half of the game, and I just thought, what a wonderful story of an unsung hero of the game.
Okay, well done, and well bashed with that microphone. We'll certainly try to edit that out afterwards, but well done. Rocky?
I'm going to go for Natasha Hunt. I know it's only her birthday, but it just shows how loved she is. She had people there from the 2014 World Cup that she was the scrum half, winning scrum half there. Yeah. Sevens, England Sevens players, Gloucester players, Lichfield players. Such a lovely girl, and to see her on stage singing and then jumping off the stage into the crowd, she's still got a lot of fun in her, so good girl.
Okay, Christian.
I can't quite believe I'm putting this name forward in such a serious context, but no, your article on the weekend was superb, Stephen, I've got to say, and you mention in it how you truly believe that the intervention of some people has saved a life. And that's a number of people. It's not just the RPA or anyone else. Numerous people have contributed, but one guy in particular came on board with the RPA in the summer, and he's probably the most unassuming, strange 40-cap international ex-rugby player you could ever meet. But he landed as the player development manager at Sale Sharks in the summer. And I think within his first 2 months in the job, what landed on his plate was the biggest welfare issue we've had as an association in years. And not only did he deal with it by the book and give the support that was needed to save a life, but he also devoted huge amounts of his own personal time and also feelings towards helping an individual who was very difficult to help at the start of proceedings. So Mike McCarthy, one of the weirdest fish I have ever had the pleasure of coming across, a top bloke, but he is my nomination for the Hero of the Week.
Well, so far we've got three nominations. People are all a bit bonkers. But there were three good ones. I have to say, I'm still going to trump you all. I think mine is still best. It's she's a little bit young, but it's Lily Orla Jennings, who's Mark's baby, who's got the biggest, brightest, most almost volcanic smile I've ever seen. And in a room where that sort of thing was really needed. So I have to say that we've got four good ones there. I think I might even bottle it and put everyone in joint fourth place. But Lily Orla Jennings was absolutely lovely, and thank God, as I said to Mark, she's got a mum's looks, not his. Thanks a million, Rocky. It's always an honour. Slotty, it's always reasonably a big honour when you're on. And Christian, thanks for coming, and hopefully you come back and tell us the fruits of some of your work later. Thanks for listening to The Ruck.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.